Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners. So we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
We also explain words and language rules, all while bringing you stories and information from around the world. Today on the program, you will hear stories from Brian Lynn, John Russell, Lucia Malonig, and Bruce Albert. Dan Friedel will tell us what's trending today, and Anna Mateo will have this week's health report. But first, here is Brian Lynn.
Security experts are studying a computer software virus that has affected computers in at least 150 countries. The cyber attack, first reported last Friday, hit companies, government agencies, and hospitals across the world. Attackers used malware, which infects computers and takes control of user data. The infection encrypts the records and blocks use of computer files. The virus can spread quickly to other electronic devices linked to the infected computer. The cyber attack was described by experts as ransomware. They chose this term because the computer is held hostage until the hackers receive a ransom payment. Officials said affected computers received a message demanding payment of $300 to unlock data. Victims were told the ransom would rise to $600 within 3 days. Security experts said paying the money did not guarantee a fix for infected computers. The malware used in the attack was said to be similar to a program stolen from the U.S. National Security Agency, or NSA. It was identified in NSA documents published online without the agency's knowledge. The NSA does not publicly discuss its activities, but the agency reportedly developed the malware to be used for surveillance. The malware only affected Windows operating systems. In March, Microsoft released a software update to protect the Windows operating system. But experts said many organizations did not apply the fix or were using older software programs. The attack locked up computers at factories, banks, government agencies, and affected transport and communications systems. Europe's police agency Europol said the attack had affected more than 100,000 organizations. Among the victims were the National Health Service, or NHS, in Britain, and Russia's Interior Ministry and National Railway Service. Also hit were Spanish telecommunications company Telefonica, French carmaker Renault, and American shipper FedEx. NHS officials said the attack affected about one-fifth of regional groups that operate British hospitals and centers. This led to thousands of canceled appointments and operations. The British healthcare system was still having problems on Monday, but Health Minister Jeremy Hunt said no new attacks were reported. He added that the level of criminal activity is at the lower end of what was expected. Thousands of infections were reported on Monday, mainly in Asia, where businesses were closed when the malware first hit. Chinese media said the attack affected 29,372 organizations, as well as hundreds of thousands of electronic devices. Universities and other schools were among the hardest hit. Hospitals, train stations, mail delivery, and other government services were also reportedly affected. In Japan, 2,000 computers were reportedly infected. Companies including Hitachi and Nissan Motor Company experienced problems but said operations were not seriously affected. In Indonesia, the malware locked patient information at two Jakarta hospitals, causing delays. In the United States, officials said they were working to identify those responsible for the attack. Tom Bossert is a Homeland Security advisor to U.S. President Donald Trump. Speaking to American television, Bossert described the attack as an extremely serious threat. But, he added, the situation had been brought under control for now. I'm Brian Lynn.
News reporters in Cameroon say they are having problems doing their work because of government restrictions on the press. They say the restrictions have affected their reports about a strike in English-speaking areas and fighting with Boko Haram militants. Eight journalists have been arrested in connection with their stories about the strike in English-speaking areas. The protests started in November. In March, the National Communication Council, or NCC, suspended another 18 reporters and media organizations. The NCC said they failed to respect norms and ethics for professional journalists. Some of those suspended had published reports critical of government actions to deal with the strike. Others had reported on concerns over the return of Nigerian refugees displaced by Boko Haram fighters. Peter Isoka is president of the NCC. He told VOA that journalists must report news in a responsible way. If you don't respect what is supposed to guide a nation, there is chaos, he said. Do you allow for chaos because you are talking about freedom? No. Journalists in Cameroon say press freedom is at risk. Kenyan Sam works for the Cameroon Post newspaper in Yaoundé, the capital. He criticized an April 23rd warning from the NCC. It said that the media should not report on demands for secession or a return to federalism. We know that a newspaper is a marketplace of ideas, Nsam said. We can talk about federalism, not necessarily promote it. When you slam a ban on a topic like that, You cannot say the press is free in Cameroon, he added. Eugene Fongwa is the editor-in-chief of the Standard Tribune. He says the government restrictions have had a bad effect on the country's journalists.
For instance, we have criminal libel, which is like a permanent axe over the head of the journalist, which means that the simple fact that you can go to jail for doing journalism is a deterrent to free work. And so you find that a lot of journalists have gone into self-censorship.
Officials have arrested journalists under a 2014 anti-terrorism law and the revised penal code of 2016. Issa Chiroma is Cameroon's Minister of Communication and a government spokesperson. He says all arrested journalists will get a fair trial. He added that some of the journalists were arrested for reasons other than their work.
I am mostly thinking of those who are accused of threats to public security, national integrity, or being accomplice with terrorist activities. For each of these cases, they were brought before competent courts, which rules out in all freedom and all independence.
Some journalists in Cameroon have started wearing black as a silent form of protest. Two media rights groups, Freedom House and Reporters Without Borders, each downgraded the country's rating in press freedom studies released last month. I'm John Russell.
A court in Austria ordered Facebook to remove messages it says unfairly attacked Green Party leaders. This came after Germany approved a plan last month to fine social media up to $55 million if they fail to remove untrue and hateful postings. Elsewhere in Europe, there are other efforts to remove hateful and threatening posts from social media. And the European Union is considering similar EU-wide rules. Barbara Perry is an expert on online hate attacks at the University of Ontario Institute of Technology in Canada. She said, increasingly, we are seeing hate speech flourish online and becoming an organizing base for folks who otherwise would be sitting in their basements and drinking beer. Often, the targets of threatening posts have found little they could do to stop them, she said. Many come from people who do not provide their real names.
In Austria, Green Party officials requested a court order to remove posts they say were not only hateful, but included false information. Some postings said a Green Party candidate was very sick. The candidate was forced to release medical records to show he was healthy, the Austrian Green Party said. In its recent ruling, the Austrian court said Facebook must remove certain postings about the Green Party, not only from its Austrian pages, but worldwide. Facebook did not provide an immediate comment. James Grimmelman is a law professor and expert on internet laws and regulations at Cornell Tech in New York City. He said the Austrian court's ruling follows recent trends on online hate speech. Online hate speech has been subject to European bans for many years, Grimmelman said. Some European countries are considering giving people the right to be forgotten by not having their internet history captured by search engines such as Google, he said. Regulating speech always requires a careful balance, Grimmelman said. Hate speech and anti-terrorism laws are used in other countries to suppress the political opposition, he said. It is still to be determined, he said, if the Austrian courts can strike the right balance between threatening speech and people expressing unpopular opinions. In the 2016 U.S. presidential election, the Hillary Clinton campaign complained people were regularly posting false stories on social media. Some postings said she was very sick. Some said she had committed crimes, and others gave false information about her positions on important issues.
Last year, Canadian lawmaker Sandra Jansen asked fellow members of the Alberta legislature to stand up against social media attacks on her and other women politicians. She told CBC Radio that she was being hit regularly with hateful messages. Among the comments she told CBC, "Dead meat. Sandra should stay in the kitchen where she belongs. Fly with the crows and get shot." Attacks on social media are not limited to public officials. Last month, the Southern Poverty Law Center posted a lawsuit against a neo-Nazi website it said was terrorizing a Jewish woman and her family. The lawsuit says that Andrew Anglin used his website, The Daily Stormer, to start a troll storm against the Tanya Gersh family of Montana. A troll storm is when people target a person by posting many critical and often false online comments. Anglin complained that Gersh, who helps people buy and sell homes, had pressured the mother of a white nationalist to sell her home. Her lawyer says the charge is false. Anglin urged his readers to take action against Gersh and other Jewish residents of Whitefish, Montana. He posted phone numbers and social media information for the family, and that brought threats of physical violence and anti-Jewish comments, the lawsuit says. The federal court in Montana does not list a lawyer for Anglin. He has not posted any papers with the court. I'm Lucia Malonig.
And I'm Bruce Alpert.
This is What's Trending Today. A series of firsts continued for Portugal, with Salvador Sobral's Eurovision Song Contest win over the weekend in Kiev, Ukraine. Before Saturday, the best Portugal had done in the popular singing competition was sixth place. That was back in 1996. Portugal first took part in Eurovision in 1964. Sobral's song, Ama Pelos Dois, translates into English as Love for Both of Us. The song was written by his sister, Luisa, who joined him on stage for a final performance after he won the contest.
O meu coração pode amar pelos dois.
Sobral won the competition by 143 points. He finished ahead of Christian Kostov of Bulgaria. His song was Beautiful Mess. When Sobral returned to Lisbon on Sunday, he told reporters he was happy his song won. I hope the gala stops being a popularity contest, he said. Most years, the Eurovision contest winners have used electronic instruments, glamorous costumes, backup dancers, and even fireworks. Sobral's quiet love song, however, was backed by string instruments and a piano. Music is not fireworks. Music is feeling, Sobral said when he accepted the award. The Prime Minister of Portugal praised Sobral's performance on Twitter. Antonio Costa wrote, "A page of history has been written in Portuguese this evening at Eurovision. Bravo, Salvador. Bravo, Portugal." Sobral's victory is the latest piece of good news for the country. Last summer, Cristiano Ronaldo and the Portuguese soccer team won its first ever European championship. And experts say that Portugal's economy is getting stronger following a financial crisis that resulted in a bailout by the International Monetary Fund and the European Commission. And now, thanks to Sobral's victory, Lisbon will host the 2018 Eurovision Song Contest. Sobral said he does not want to be seen as a hero, just as a musician. "I'm not a hero," he said. "That's Cristiano Ronaldo." And that's what's trending today. I'm Dan Friedel.
From VOA Learning English, this is the Health and Lifestyle Report. We spend about one-third of our lives asleep. This may sound like a lot of time, but it is not wasted. Our bodies need sleep to stay healthy. Not getting enough sleep, or as we sometimes say, shut-eye, can make us sick. The immune system protects the body from diseases and infections. Not getting enough sleep hurts this protective system. The Mayo Clinic is a nonprofit research hospital in the United States. Its website explains that when we sleep, our bodies release proteins that support sleep and help us fight infections. They add that infection-fighting antibodies and cells are reduced during periods when you don't get enough sleep. A new study from the University of Washington in the U.S. seems to confirm this. Dr. Nathaniel Watson was the lead writer of the study. He is also co-director of the university's Medicine Sleep Center at Harborview Medical Center. Watson says his study shows that the immune system works best when the body gets enough sleep. For the study, Watson and his team studied 11 pairs of identical twins. This is an important difference from other sleep studies. Other research did not study identical twins. The identical twins, however, had different sleep patterns. Researchers found that the twin who slept less had a weaker immune system. Watson says his study showed, for the first time, that a long-term lack of sleep shuts down parts of the immune system. He says parts that move white blood cells around the body are affected. White blood cells fight infection in the body. Watson adds that the results confirm a finding of other sleep studies. They found that when sleep-deprived people are given a vaccine, fewer antibodies are produced. If sleep-deprived people are then exposed to a virus, he says, they are more likely to get the virus. Watson's study provides more evidence that sleep is important to overall health and well-being. And sleep is especially important to immune health. The researchers published their findings in the journal Sleep. To stay in good health, experts at the Mayo Clinic say that adults should get 7 to 8 hours of sleep. Teenagers need 9 to 10 hours, and school-aged children may need more than 10 hours of sleep a night. Experts say the quality and quantity of our sleep becomes poor as we age. This happens because brain circuits that control sleep slowly begin to weaken. Experts say the process begins in our 30s. By the time we reach our 50s, the average person has lost 50% of their ability to have a restful sleep. These people also have trouble falling asleep and staying asleep through the night. From middle age on, they say these problems only get worse, and they can affect our health. The website health.com lists several signs that may mean you are not getting enough sleep. You're always hungry or you've gained weight. A lack of sleep can affect the hormones that tell your brain you have eaten enough. You have trouble making decisions. A lack of sleep may affect your higher-level brain functions, such as problem-solving. You have trouble remembering things. Sleep helps prepare the brain for new memories. You feel very emotional. People who are sleep-deprived may feel unable to control their emotions, whether they be angry, sad, or happy. Your skin doesn't look good. When we sleep, the body repairs damaged cells, like skin cells. We don't call it beauty sleep for nothing. You are having trouble seeing. When you're tired, you may not be able to control your eye muscles. There are things people can do to get better sleep. Health experts recommend exercise and avoiding work on computers and electronic devices before bed. A cool room is also a better environment for sleeping. And that's the Health and Lifestyle Report. I'm Ana Mateo.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.